It is Saturday, March 21st, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Geek News, and in the second half, a conversation with a Flash and Flex developer all about those amazing technologies online. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Our show today is a good one. We have some interesting geek news stories, and a guest from Berkeley, Walt Schlender, will join us in the second half to talk about Flash and Flex web development and Silverlight, these applications that make your browser a lot more engaging and interactive. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Al Luckow, he's a new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Hello out there.
Wow. Ben Jaffe, freelance media guy. Hi.
Good day.
And to be clear, last week's show, you did a great voice impersonation of a woman that knew a lot about cats.
Yes, I did.
And that was wonderful. Thank you. I was listening to it again yesterday, and you were a blast. I wish I was better for you because I thought it was funnier in rehearsal. In any case. And we also have Ryder Brooks. And Ryder, it's been a while since you've been here. Hi.
Hi. Well, thanks. Glad to be back.
Good. I can't see your face. It's really. Let's rotate this thing out of here. There you are. Hi, Ryder. Hi. And Ryder is a support engineer at Sun Microsystems. Hi. during the show, we're going to be asking you to contribute to KOSP. This is the last day of the pledge drive if you make it happen that way. That means that we need your donations. And you can do that at any time during the show today. We're going to help you save money during the show. That's kind of our theme. We're going to figure out ways to make your life a little cheaper in the sense that we'll save you money. And the idea that you take those cents that you'll be saving and you donate them to KUSP. During the hour of Geek Speak, we are looking for a matching grant, a challenge, if you will. So if you'd like to donate right now to help your community of other listeners donate, we'd really appreciate your call. The phone number is 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. And strangely enough, that's a 1-800 number, which means it's a toll-free number. So it's toll-free, 1-888-777-1507. You can donate right now to help your contributing listeners contribute. Let's start off by just saying that it's actually really easy to waste money. Without thinking about it, you can have a leaky faucet, right? There are ways in your life you can waste money all the time. If you're lazy, you can waste money. But let's talk about energy wasting, okay? Let's talk about the largest waste of energy ever. I need like a science thing. I don't have anything off the Al, you got a good memory.
Yeah. This happened on September 16th. This is just it is 2008, and you had mentioned what is the biggest energy waste.
Biggest energy waste ever.
Yeah, this is just nature wasting energy, just blatantly wasting energy. There's a satellite up in space called the NASA SWIFT satellite, and it recorded a record-breaking gamma ray burst from, it doesn't have a very nice name. It's GRB080916C. They're very creative with the naming of these things. It's basically a rapidly spinning corpse in space called the pulsar. And this thing it gives off like a gamma burst. And they recorded the largest gamma burst, the largest energy burst ever recorded of anything. It lasted 23 minutes, which is 700 times longer than the average burst they've ever recorded.
Okay.
And it's 23 minutes long. And what that means is even after accounting for the stretching effect of cosmic expansion,
energy.
Yep,
sure.
That means the burst endured for 4 minutes when it was created 12.2 billion years ago.
Oh, that's a long time ago. So 12.2 billion years ago, some pulsar thing exploded or did something massive energy
apparently
waste.
It's rated at 13 giga electron volts. Whatever that means, I'm not really sure.
That's a lot, I'm sure.
I'm not a scientist. I just pretend to be one on the radio.
That's right. We don't know what we're talking about. So this thing lasted for like 9 minutes, you said, or 4 minutes?
Well, it says the burst lasted 23 minutes.
So that's our side of it, when we got stretched out because of space, because of the redshift, if you will.
Right.
Interesting. Very cool. So all right, so that's the biggest waste.
It took 4 minutes to happen, but lasted longer when we recorded it.
And we're not talking about that kind of waste at your home. What we're talking about is the leaky faucet kind of stuff.
But that's nature. By nature, we waste energy.
In fact, you have to think and plan to not waste energy, and that's kind of the point, is that you have to have some intelligence to not waste energy.
We're humans. We're smart. We can do things.
Speak for yourself. So let's start off by just bringing up one idea to save, and Al, I'm going to leave this to you as well. One way to save some money, make some money, whatever, by not doing so much waste.
Right. Well, if you have a lot of electronics laying around your house, I don't know anybody – who doesn't? Of course, that's my friends. But, we all have all these things. We bought the newest thing, and then now it's like not the newest thing, and we have the newest thing, and then we have this old newest thing laying around.
You're talking about like cell phones and old radios and TVs you're not using, things like that.
Yeah. There's a lot of places on the web, and I'm going to mention one of them. It's called buymytronics.com.
Okay.
And what they do is they focus on cell phones, PDAs, game consoles, iPods, iPhones, those kind of things. And you can, even if it's broken, you can contact this web service, and they will actually buy your used and broken electronics.
Nice.
And what they do is they recondition it, or they use the parts, and depending on how bad it is, this is how much you're going to get. They're going to pay you via PayPal. They say within 48 hours. Like I said, they are focusing on those devices, but they are planning on taking things like GPS units, and you really just have
to. We're talking about kind of small, cheap things to ship, basically.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what they do.
Very cool. So if you've got like a second generation phone, you're not sure what to do with it yet, you go up to the site, you get a mailing package from them, ship it off to them, and they'll give you money.
Right, and they're going to recycle it. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with your electronics, but it's nice to know that you can get a little money for it, and then they're going to repurpose it. They don't say on the site that they sell these things. I mean, they're obviously fixing them and selling them somehow, but they don't really sell them from the site. So you can't go there and buy used electronics, which isn't not a bad idea either.
You're right. That's true. But okay, so there's the first idea on saving you some money. And theoretically, you could make a few dollars by saving some electronics around the house. And all we're asking you today is, as we come up with ideas to save you, you think about saving energy and money for yourself. You think about how you can then contribute to the KOSP. We really do need your contributions. I just want to remind you that we're trying to close this up. We're trying to finish this whole pledge drive very quickly. So please give us a call right now and make that step closer to closing. 888-777-1507. Again, that's 1-888-777-1507. Of course, you can go online and go to kosp.org. We're going to be doing this a little bit more, but right now I'd urge you to go ahead and contribute to the station. 888-777-1507. 888-777-1507. Or go to kosp.org and click on donate. All right, let's get some geek news going on. Ben, what's going on with TV and sci-fi and such?
Okay, I have actually a pretty depressing news item. At least I find it very depressing.
I thought it was kind of interesting.
As a geek, because the title of this article is Sci-Fi Channel Aims to Shed Geeky Image with New Name.
What?
Yeah.
No, don't
I'm
shed
offended.
Geeky image.
They're changing their name from sci-fi to sci-fi. So this is not actually a pronunciation change. This is a spelling change.
It has no importance at all.
Yeah. Here, I'll spell it for you guys.
Please do.
Yeah. Okay.
What was the old spelling?
SCI as in science and FI as in fiction.
Okay.
Sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
Right. That's the whole reason we call it sci-fi.
We had the inventor on that term on Geek Speak. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
It's so horrible.
Oh no.
All right. Go on.
And it's been called that for 16 years. This network is 16 years old, ever since 1992. Yeah, I did math correctly. Okay, that's good. I normally botch that. But they're now calling it Sci-Fi, S-Y-F-Y.
Why?
Because they want to shed their geeky image.
So they think that that's less geeky?
They think that's a little cooler, and maybe it'll attract some younger people who aren't geeky.
Who's in charge over there?
Thinking about being cool is definitely not geeky.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, being cool, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Ben.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
So you're depressed about this. You're sad.
I'm sad.
I'm
outraged.
Like the sci-fi.
Okay,
gone from geeky to dorky. I mean,
sci-fi with two Y's. That's just stupid. I'm sorry if I'm just being frank.
I think that's
just
Ben's epitaph right
geeks,
there.
Geeks have never been more popular. I mean, you got Waz on Dancing with the Stars. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Waz is doing great, by the way.
He's still there.
Yeah.
So, come on. This is, everybody's into geeks nowadays.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I mean, I thought adding like Z's and Y's and X's to words that,
right,
to words that didn't meet, that didn't need it, was like 1999, you know, like, there was that, I don't know if you guys remember, I had a younger sister who,
yes, we do,
who
remember
had, no, let me finish my sentence, who had,
we
like,
out of diapers.
There were a bunch of software games like Babies with a Z,
sure,
and you know,
very 90s, you're right.
Yeah, it's so 90s, and
adding
they're just
wise,
like,
man. I don't like it. All right,
they're
thank
10
you.
Years behind.
Thank you, Ben. Writer, news, sir?
Yeah, interesting conference recently, in Vancouver, Canada, was the a pwn-to-own contest that they did at a local security conference. And they did this last year, but this year they came out real quick. I think within like 5 seconds, they uncovered an exploit that took complete control over a fully patched Mac OS running Safari.
Really?
4. And like inside 5 seconds, I think. They demonstrated is clicking on a URL, and within 5 seconds, the computer was completely taken over.
We have covered these in the past. This idea of let's get together and see if we can crack the security systems or browsers.
And this one, it's prize based. So the contestant basically wins the laptop that they took over.
Cool.
These two fellows basically just took over the contest.
Do you know what the exploit was?
No, they don't really go into details. It's pretty much
that's part of the deal, right?
That
they don't
want to.
Yeah, they don't want to come up with a detailed solution until they have a response.
And one of the people that he had won last year for a similar exploit basically saved this exploit all year long for this conference and did not disclose it to anybody, including Apple. And his premise is that he's doing this for money. You know,
oh, interesting.
Apple developers get paid to fix and find security bugs. So
would he accept a large sum of money from Apple? Is it the same exploit?
No, it was a different exploit from last year.
Okay.
And he, you know,
you would think
basically
that
once he's done it, then he gets his prize and then he's willing to provide it. But he's not going to disclose it until Apple's
Let's be clear about this. Yeah. This is kind of complicated. So what the basic idea is, software has holes in it, and these are, we call them exploits. And it's basically a security concept that if I make a package of software and I run on my computer and then I go and, like a browser is a really good example, I go to other places, what I don't want to happen is I don't want that other place to be able to run code on my computer, taking over my computer. So when there is a hole in the in the application I'm using, we call that an exploit, and it's an ability for, well, we call it an unpatched hole, a bug. But the exploit would be the ability for somebody else to then use your machine and get inside your machine through that hole,
mm-hmm, and or extract information.
So there's actually contests and stuff, and that's basically what this is talking about. Yeah.
And it wasn't just Safari on Mac. It was
everyone failed.
Everyone failed except for
Google Chrome.
Really?
And no one entered for Internet
Explorer. Excuse me?
I don't think anyone entered with a patch for or with an exploit for Internet Explorer.
Because Internet Explorer 8 was exploited as well.
It was?
Yeah, it was the order. It went in this order. It went Safari, Internet Explorer 8, Firefox 3, and those were the primary contestants.
Right.
They actually there was an exploit for a vulnerability for Chrome. But because of the backend security with the sandboxing and the underlying kind of memory randomization with the Windows OS, they weren't able to actually do anything with that exploit.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that update. So I guess Chrome right now is your safer bet on a Windows environment or a Macintosh environment.
Mm-hmm. I don't think
it's not.
There's a Wine emulation project on.
They've been
on
promising that they've been working on it for forever.
They have Linux. They have a Linux alpha, but they don't have it.
All right. Okay.
Nope. I'd love it.
You have some thank yous, Ben?
Oh, yeah, I've got thank yous. From Eugenie in Capitola, thank you for your pledge. Lauren in Santa Cruz. Amy in Capitola. And then we also have an anonymous new member from Boulder Creek. So thank you, all four of you, for pledging to KUSP.
You can pledge right now as well. The numbers are 888-777-1507. As promised, let's go for another money-saving tip at this point. Ryder, do you have one?
Sure.
Money or energy saving tip?
Yeah. There's an interesting website called Watson, WATTZON.com. And the premise here is sort of shifting away from the, you know, a common goal of understanding what your carbon footprint is for, you know, in terms of global environments and whatnot, shifting that to more of like a collective energy consumption, how much you use, you know, mm-hmm. and measured in watts. And the effort here is to, you know, basically lower your energy consumption.
We talked about this really
cost savings and yeah. global change as well.
We talked about this really briefly last week's show because our guest David Merrill from MIT had this on his site and he was kind of suggesting it. As but how does it actually work? You go up and sign up for an account or something and then you register everything you own? What is it? How
you
does it work?
It starts essentially with the survey and a series of questions, different categories. It goes from types of food you eat, how you travel, what kind of commuting. If you walk, you know, ride the bicycle, if you take long airplane trips.
It's
kind
of like an
trips.
Awareness survey of like, yeah. oh, these are all the things that could
food
be wasting
Fuji, appliances,
energy.
Games, uh-huh. televisions, all that sort of stuff. Anything that conceivably consumes energy.
So things like how much TV do you watch a day? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, it could be yeah, that. Yeah. Okay. Or what type of television you have and essentially that. And then at the end, you can register and it gives you kind of an energy printout profile that gives you an idea of your global energy consumption and how you compare to others.
And it's by like how many watts a day that you're using.
They
have
it's
a summary like that too.
They
yeah.
give you like a global watch, and it also kind of includes kind of your infrastructure, like your government. You know, how much on average as a participant of your government do you consume in energy as being part of the United States government or different? I'm not sure if it actually extends outside of the U.S. in terms of centricity for the survey, if it's global or if it's U.S. specific, but it does include that.
But
well.
This general idea has to do with something that yeah. nature can't do by itself, but that we can, and that is to yeah. take a look at your what you're doing, yeah. really be aware of it. And that's the thing I like about it is it really just brings an awareness to yourself so you can remember to turn off the light in the bathroom. Like that kind of thing is the money-saving mm-hmm. tip. And I would argue that right now, if you were to do some of these tricks that you actually already know, you were to really make sure that you were turning things off, you could save a few cents a day, let's say 30 cents a day. And 30 cents a day is a great donation amount for KOSP, actually. It's $10 a month is really a sweet spot for donating to KOSP. I want to let you know that right now, we just got an anonymous donor in Santa Cruz to do a match for every pledge to KOSP up to a total of $500 this hour. That means that when I asked a second ago, please, if you're listening, support us by helping your community donate. They did. Somebody from Santa Cruz called up and said, okay, yep, up to $500, I will match every dollar that comes in, which means right now you get to donate to us and get your dollar doubled to some degree. So please do that right now. It's very important for KOSP. We'd like to close the pledge. We know that you think the station's important because you're listening to it. We know that it's important to your life because you're listening right now. Think of all the times you have listened and all the times we've actually asked you in the last week to donate. And if you haven't done that, do that right now. The phone numbers are 476. That's the normal call-in lines. I've been doing that for years. But the number today to talk to somebody that will take your pledge is 1-888-777-1507. Again, 1-888-777-1507. Moving on, I think, to news. Al, it's your turn.
It is. Okay. What would you like to know?
I want to know everything, but I'm going to leave.
Well, Ryder just talked about, finding out exactly what your energy footprint is. You know, looking at, you know, because you do things, you drive cars and you fly in planes and you're using up all this energy and that kind of thing. I ran across a device that actually measures all these things within your home. It's not going to tell you, you know, how much energy you used when you flew on a plane, but, you know, you can hook it into your house, and it apparently has a 2-second reaction time. It's called TED.
Oh, these are one of these things that you mm-hmm. unplug your appliance and plug it through this thing, and it tells you how much energy
yeah,
it's using.
Yeah, but this thing connects more to your whole house. Oh. So it's not necessarily – well, I guess it is telling you what you're using. Like when you turn a lamp on, it changes. I mean it's the thing they're saying is it's a 2-second reaction time. So if you see it change just after you turned on your refrigerator or whatever, you know, you're going to see how much that used.
Where does this plug in? How complicated is it to plug in it?
It actually can connect to your computer too as well, and it maps to your computer doesn't really necessarily say where it plugs in.
Okay, so it's probably at the breaker box to some degree, yeah. I'm assuming, unless it's doing really interesting phase
analysis.
Well,
they have it. They show it on like a side table of in your house. I think it goes through your electrical system somehow.
Yeah, so probably there's a meter thing that goes on your meter, mm-hmm. and then there's it uses the local network of the power grid to mm-hmm. then to supply it to your computer. So the basic idea is you get to chart your entire house, kind of like your sleep pad
yep.
that you're developing matches
yep.
your
and,
sleep
and
pad.
They call it their TED footprint.
TED footprint.
Yeah, so it tells you how much energy is being used. So, you know, doing something like that, addition to knowing, you know, like what Ryder was talking about, you know, you'd pretty much have yourself covered. You'd know how much you're using in your house, and you'd have a good idea of, you know, what kind of energy you're wasting just doing things, you know,
right.
flying. And,
right. Well, thank you for that. We're talking about saving energy in your home with the idea that if we save you energy and save you expense and save you money, you're able to donate some of that money to KOSP. So please feel free to do that at any time. I'll give it the numbers again, but I want to get to another news story, a geek news story for the week. Ben, you had something else that I really liked. Let me see if I can remember what it was that I want to know about. Oh, yeah. Australia?
Oh, yes. Okay, so right. Australia. Right.
Right.
Oh, no, don't do that, please.
Do the whole thing in an Australian accent.
I said hello. I was like...
Okay.
But anyway, moving past the accents. So Australia has... there's this internet filter, this blacklist. In Australia, if you try to go to certain websites, you won't be able to. It's kind of like China's situation, except maybe a bit simpler and maybe not also as restrictive. But it turns out that their blacklist that they have said has, you know, however many, like the reports claim that it had between 1,600 and 1,300 or 1,600 and 1,600 pages blocked on their listed on their blacklist. Turns out that it's actually over 1,000 more than that. Oh. They actually underreported it, and it got leaked. Supposedly by a network admin, network filter admin, to WikiLeaks, which is the website that, you know, posts up leaks and things like that.
Okay, WikiLeaks, that's
WikiLeaks.
Cool.
WikiLeaks is really cool. It seems like Wiki everything is really cool nowadays. I mean, but anyway. So yeah, that is kind of bad. It turns out that actually on this blacklist there are actually several legitimate businesses websites. Like there were a couple online poker sites. A lot of people feel a little sketchy about poker sites, but there are also two bus companies, some Wikipedia entries, and some Google group pages and Yahoo group pages, and like a dental surgery website.
Weird.
So yeah, these are being blacklisted and
some reason.
It's possible that it's an accident that they ended up on the blacklist and they just...
That's the trouble with blacklist, that idea that, you know, if you add it in, then no one gets to see it anymore.
Exactly.
Great Wall of China is a really good example of that, but Great Firewall of China, excuse me. So so I like that this got leaked. At the same time, I'm curious like what their public response is to it. Like what are the officials saying? You know,
yeah.
Are these mistakes or was there hate speech, or, you know, is there some real defining thing that determines that that something gets blocked?
None that I've found so far. The report was on the 19th, which was 2 days ago.
Right, so it's fresh.
Yeah, it's fresh hot off the presses, right?
Speaking
first
of,
podcast.
To... Speaking of fresh hot off the presses, I just, the station manager, Terry Green, who's in the shadows today, kind of standing behind me, just informed me that GeekSpeak right now is the last time that you're able to pledge to the spring drive. We're going to stop the pledge drive at the end of the hour, which means 30 minutes from now, we're not going to be pushing for you to pledge to the station anymore. But we have $10,200 left to go on our goal for this spring drive, which means that the station took a look at their budget with a lot of volunteers that are actually the board of directors, a lot of volunteers that are on air. Like, for example, everybody in this room, we're all volunteers. We all, with our intelligence in place, looked at how we can run the station effectively for a year. We break that into two pledge drives, a fall and a spring. The money that we set up for the budget for this season, for this half of the year, was a certain amount. We had that as our main goal, and we have a half an hour left to make that goal, and that goal was $10,200 left, I should say. So what I need you to do right now is call in. In a half an hour, we're going to have Car Talk on. They're great, and we're not going to be asking for money during that time. So right now is the time. Go ahead and sacrifice your time of GeekSpeak to call us right now. It only takes like 3 minutes to go ahead and pledge an amount that you feel is comfortable. We're not asking for too much money. We're asking for just enough money, the amount of money that will work for you and your budget. And right now your money is matched dollar for dollar by an anonymous donor in Santa Cruz, and I thank them very much for donating. I want to thank you as well. The entire station wants to thank you, but to do that, you've got to call in. 1-888-777-1507. Again, that's 1-888-777-1507. Of course, you can go online. Go to kosp.org and sign up with secure donation at that point. I want to mention that GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. Ben, that wasn't the dentist that Australia's firewall blocked, was it?
I don't think so.
Okay, good.
He's not in Australia, is he?
No, but the block is about people from outside Australia, I'm assuming.
Somebody must have something against dentists.
Well, I think everyone to some degree has something against dentists.
Dentists
the pain that they cause.
But they improve our lives.
Dentists don't have anything against dentists.
No, I don't know.
Amongst themselves, yeah.
I got to say, though, Henry's actually my dentist, and he's really quite good with pain management. I haven't had any pain with him, so... So I don't have anything against him. That's why I was hoping Australia doesn't. Okay, let's move on to our guest at hand. Because right here in the air room, unbeknownst to most people, we have Walt. Walt, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, thank you, Lyle.
So, Walt, I understand what Flash is. It's that stuff that's really kind of annoying, video playback, lots of loud sounds, and gets in my way. But can you defend that first right off the bat?
Because
that's
a lot
what
of
Flash
people,
has been for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people really have that opinion of Flash. And I sort of look at it a little differently. I mean, Flash basically is Adobe carving a big piece of your browser out of the HTML space and providing that space with some technologies which don't really exist with HTML, which is the standard language which the web operates in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, originally Flash started out being used a lot for banner ads, which I think gave it a lot of the really bad taste people have. But it's really evolved, and there's some really interesting sort of amazing communities building around some of these technologies to build things like 3D in the browser. There are people who are trying to clone Microsoft Word in the browser. There are people who are trying to do all sorts of different business applications.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we see in Flash is we see the beginnings of a whole new class of web technologies and the ability for companies to begin to release their products with a lot shorter release cycles.
So you're talking about like normally, traditionally an application would be developed as a full application. There's a test cycle, and then they put on a CD and sell it in the store. You're talking about using web applications to kind of remove that cycle where there's a new version all the time, every time you log in kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it'll have a real profound effect. You know, like for instance, imagine if Microsoft were able to keep rolling out Word over and over again, 50 times per day.
Right.
And every time they tweak something, they'd figure out whether or not it made more sense to the users or less sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're right at this point where suddenly that's beginning to become a real reality.
You'd mentioned Flash and Flex at the same in sort of the same sentence.
Yeah.
Maybe people might a lot of people know what Flash is. What exactly when you mentioned maybe you could explain how that is different than Flash or how it's the same as Flash. What
sure. So actually, it's a very Flash has an interesting history. I think it's about 12 years old right now, and don't quote me on that. It's
I actually used
years.
Future Splash. When it first came out.
Right,
one
Splash
of the,
is what it used to be
future,
called.
Splash, yeah. I used that when it first came out.
When was that?
It was probably, it was in the 90s. Yeah. It was probably around 97, maybe, I remember.
I like that, 97-ish.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because actually it's had the ability to program things in Flash for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
But Flash has been known more as a designer tool, I think, than a developer tool. And I think that that's really been something which has meant that it's been difficult for Flash to take off in the developer community.
Right. So what you're talking about is that it's got this really interesting graphical user interface you can draw. I mean, it's really an animation tool is one of the first things it was for. And so there's idea of different frame cells and kind of like your traditional animation tool where you can draw colors and shapes and you get that kind of Flash drawing style. And so a lot of people think of Flash as that application, that ability to draw cartoons.
It's kind of like Director.
Right.
You know, we were all using Director back then to make CDs and interactive CDs. And then I think when Flash came out, you know, it was a Macromedia product. And didn't they kind of try to make it fit that Director mold little bit?
Kind of a mix. But what I was going to lead you up into, Walt, is that I remember in Flash ActionScript MX, or maybe it was Flash 8, using ActionScript 2 to not have anything drawn at all and just write code that would develop drawings. And a good example of that is you're going to produce a Pong game. You actually don't want to draw anything. You want to actually tell it algorithmically to make two paddles and make a ball and give it physics to move around. And so you're not using the drawing environment at all.
Exactly. There were all sorts of problems with the drawing environment. Most of them were workflow problems. You couldn't have multiple developers working on the same Flash FLA file. And that meant that you were going to have the complexity of your application restricted by the fact that the tool wasn't very good. So what Adobe basically
did... For a programmer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Adobe said, well, look, we've got this plugin. It's the Flash plugin. It's installed in 98% of the world's computer internet browsers, which means that, you know, literally, we can have desktop class applications running in the browser on everybody's machines, but nobody's writing software for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they thought about this and they said, okay, well, you know, really, the problem is programmers don't understand how to write software for the Flash plugin. So how can we make the process of writing this software more
programmer-like?
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's where Flex evolved from. So if there's anybody who's ever programmed HTML, you know there's like these tags, right? Flex has the same thing. You write out your user interface sort of the way that you'd write out HTML. And just similarly, you can attach code hooks to those tags.
So if you're like a traditional like Java developer or a C developer and stuff, and you want to start developing in the kind of for the Flash plugin for web applications that use the Flash plugin, you'd use Flex, and it'd be like an SDE. I'm sorry, KDE.
SDK.
SDK. Thank you.
How many letters?
A development kit.
Yeah. Software basically, Flex. To be technical, Flex is what's called an application framework, and that means that it's going to provide you with buttons, and it's going to provide you with labels and text fields and all sorts of other things. And you can say, okay, I want a text field. So you write out a text field tag, and it just pops up.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing which you can do is you can always take Flash, the Flash IDE, which allows you to do the very beautiful visual things, and package up a Flash component and pull it into Flex.
I see. So you can draw your pretty stuff in Flash and then save that as a component, and then Flex use it as an application
element. And you just meld it all together. And in the end, you can come up with, I mean, experiences, which are great, and also some really cool new things like 3D in the browser. Or
the other thing that Adobe did with Flex is they open sourced ActionScript 3, the engine behind it, right?
Not quite.
Okay, what's going on there?
Yeah, so Flash, the Flash player, which is the plugin which runs in your browser, is still closed source as far as I know. What this thing called Flex is, it's this application framework, so all the text fields and text boxes and everything. That's code which is written in pure ActionScript 3. And basically what Adobe did is they open sourced that section of their tools. So they still have closed source all the development tools, but they've open sourced the Flex framework. So you can actually go in and you can see how the tools work. And people are making their own sort of, you know, like versions of list controls and list boxes and stuff.
But the compiling of it is actually open source, correct? Or is it not?
To my knowledge, I think...
They're still in charge of that?
Okay. I'm not sure on that, actually.
This is the one thing that, like, the one thing I don't like about application development, when the company owns the path, right? It doesn't work. Like, you need the open source concept that I can go with my own code and my own environment and edit and write and compile without having to say, I will not be able to compile this anymore without this corporation. That's the part that concerns me. And it's very similar to why, for a long time, I didn't like the AAC format of music, right? The only player that supported it was Apple's, and it was kind of proprietary. Now it's opened up, and I'm like, okay, I don't mind that as much. So that idea of being in control of the work process, the entire thing, is concerning to me.
Yeah, I think that a lot of Flash is still closed sourced. And okay. I'm not sure I agree with you 100% on that. I think one of the beauties of Flash is that Adobe has really done a good job of documenting things. There's not a lot of splintering in the community. It's very, very easy. I've taken a lot of people and taught them how to program ActionScript 3. And it has one of the fastest learning curves of any language I've come across.
Mm-hmm.
It looks very similar to Java. But the reason is really because there's not a lot of mystery in where do I go when I have a question. You can go and...
It's got a documentation.
Yeah. And I would say that you see in the open source world a lot of people developing the same thing over and over and over again, right? I would say that what Adobe has been able to do by keeping everything sort of in-house is really push the envelope on what's possible. Like, they're about to release peer-to-peer UDP connections in the browser plugin.
So
it's going to be amazing.
Live real-time games, yeah. Hmm.
And live audio. I mean, imagine Skype on every web page in the world. You can't do these sorts of things without, if there's a lot of standards and you have to sort of make everybody happy.
Okay, we're gonna politely disagree. Maybe we'll get back to that in a little bit.
I
want to take a second, though, to thank some people. Al, can we thank some people who have called in?
Sure. Well, there's Constance Constable, who is from Seaside.
Okay.
Thank you for your pledge. There's another anonymous pledge from Santa Cruz and another anonymous pledge from Salinas. So they're coming in and people
I want to thank contributing. All. Yeah, thank you everyone that's contributed to the entire pledge. If you haven't contributed, you really do need to contribute now. The phone numbers are 888-777-1507. Let's think of another way we can save money, not necessarily energy waste, but maybe financial stuff or something. Ben?
Yeah, I've got a money-saving tip. You can use software to figure out where you're losing money, not just what you're spending too much on necessarily, but you can also figure out like where you're not your account of yours isn't making any interest.
Like if you've got maybe if you have a credit card and it's got a high interest rate, or if you've got a savings account that has a low interest rate.
Exactly.
Okay. How? There
are a bunch of services. Some of them are online. And those services will help you by giving advice on how you can either invest or ways you can distribute your money in your accounts that'll save you a little bit of money. And you can donate a portion of that money that you save to KUSP to support public radio.
Okay. So what are these services?
I found three. They're Wasabi, Mint, and Yodlee are some of the services. And they're all actually web-based services.
I actually use all three of those right now.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I'm trying to not go to Quicken. I've been kind of delinquent in my controlling of my budgets, and I want to move over to an application like Quicken, which I used to use religiously. And I don't want to be stuck to one computer, right? Because I want to be able to enter stuff when I'm away or have my wife enter stuff as well. So I'm trying to find the right product. And Mint was the first one. Mint.com, very cool application. The web application is really quite nice. All of these, actually, none of them use Flash, by the way, Walt.
not true, but we can.
Well, Mint doesn't. I mean,
Mint, a lot of Flash is actually used for, like the charts, for instance, on Mint are actually done in Flash.
They're actually done in Flash, that's true. Yeah. Okay, well, good. We'll talk about that in a second. So that's the thing is these services have great, like Mint's charts are actually really a wonderful example. You keep track of your finances. You actually sync it to your bank accounts, right? So it pulls in the last transactions. It takes a look at them. It categorizes them for you based off of how other people are categorizing. You can change your categorization. That's one of the features of this that's really nice is that if you go and shop at, you know, a certain store and what comes up in your checking account is some weird code that you can barely understand that's that store, somebody else has figured out what it was and put something in. And enough people have done that now your finances get synced and automatically it doesn't say XYZ store, blah, blah, blah. It says Outdoor World. And that's because somebody else helped you with the labeling, which is kind of cool. Then it takes a look at your history and where you're spending stuff, and it gives you analysis of your budget in this really cool chart that's done with Flash, probably Flex. But,
yeah, it is Flex, yeah.
And it charts out your spending habits like you would normally see a budget in a graphing situation. So it's really kind of a complete application. They happen to be online. The security aspect is a little creepy. Of course.
How much does it cost? I mean, is it a free thing?
Of these are free.
Oh, they're free.
Yeah, what they're doing is they take a look at analyze your system, right? And they go, well, this credit card isn't giving a great interest rate, or they could really refinance right now in this market because they know a whole bunch of your finances. Mm-hmm. And so then they're giving you kind of sales on the side, and the sales on the side are like, hey, you can save 20% on your mortgage if you switch to this other bank.
So they're using it for targeted information.
Yeah, I think their claim is that they can save you something like $2,000 the second you sign up, or the average household or something.
So what's creepy about it, Lyle?
What's creepy about it is that there's one service, and for it to really function, you got to put all your accounts in there.
I think
my current Wasabi account, which is one of the Wasabi has something that the other ones don't have, but my Wasabi account right now has all of my bank, all my credit cards, all my bank situations, and my house loan all developed in there, right?
Yeah.
And for that to work, there's not some cool magic about it. I give them my passwords and usernames for all of those, which is the biggest no-no if someone asks you for a password. And my theory behind it is the startup is doing a good, like they're a financial startup. They're going to focus heavily on not letting people steal your information.
Yeah.
So I'm trusting them, but it's creepy.
Yeah, it's true. Because
and they are a startup. I mean,
yeah, right. There's 15 guys in a room somewhere. Guys. Right?
We've all been in startups. We know what it's like.
Yeah.
Well, on the other hand, with something like Quicken, if you use something like Quicken, then you're relying on the security of your system.
That's true.
And we're geeks, so we can make sure that we have secure systems. But maybe for some not so geeky people out there, their system can be just as even more flawed than these startups' secured web service.
The reason I feel relatively safe in doing it is I would be a horrible target for identity theft. I don't have I'm under financial stress all the time. So the idea of going, ooh, let's get money from Lyle. No, that's not going to happen. Good luck.
Well, and to be fair, too, I mean, Intuit is putting a lot of their services online at this point.
Yes, they are. And Intuit actually does have a version. They are a paid version. I decided not to do it. The one thing that I don't like about most of these services is that you're not able to put future events. They like so much the syncing concept that doing a future event, like I just wrote a check and I put it in the mail, and I want to put in my system that I've written that check so that I know my account's actually reduced by that amount. Unfortunately, most of them don't allow you to do that simple thing, and it's because it's hard to sync the actual manually entered ones with the other ones. They're all kind of adding them at the same time. Wasabi has it if you're in a development mode, and it's functional.
So it's connecting to your bank account
all the time. Yeah.
So so you don't even have to enter things in.
That's right. But really, that's the whole point about doing one of these systems is you want to not trust the bank. You want to assume that they made a mistake every once in a while, because they will.
Yeah.
Somebody will cash a check to the wrong account, or something will happen.
Uh-huh.
And you want to keep track of it. So I want to kind of confirm that it's appropriate without the bank being involved to some degree. And that flow is not the best. Right now it's trust your bank. Mm-hmm. I don't like that.
Yeah, I'm with you, I think.
But $2,000 saved is the general consensus. So if you go and use like mint.com, if you want to trust them, and you start signing up and you do all this work, theoretically you'd be saving a lot of money for yourself. And the idea here is that we're suggesting ways of you saving money. And just like every week we give you good ideas and every week you listen to us, this week we're asking you to help pay us for that. And not exactly pay us. What you're doing is you're putting the money in so the station can keep going. It's easy to do. You call an 888, a toll-free number. You go to a website. You say, I'm going to give you a little bit of money, and this is how much I can afford. I do want to promote one gift that's a very geeky gift. We talked about it last week. We normally send a small thank you to people that donate a good sum of money. If you do $20 a month to KUSP, that's $240 a year. The gift is a really cool radio. It's a wireless radio.
It's more than a radio.
More a radio.
More than a radio.
Radio.
A wireless
flash
radio?
Much
more. They have those?
Yes. When I say stupid stuff, don't bring it up.
I haven't been able to get my wired radio to work forever. I don't know where to plug it in.
And his mic goes out. Okay, so this wireless radio has a solar panel, a crankshaft on the side. It listens to FM and AM. FM's better. It listens to also the government channels that have information like the weather and such, like shortwave stuff. Very cool. And the thing that's totally geeky about it is the USB port.
Yeah.
You can charge a USB device like your cell phone.
So you can put it somewhere where it's sunny and then hook your Bluetooth or something like that, or cell phone, and charge it with your USB just directly from the sun.
Right.
Charge your iPod.
Or crank away at it.
It's got a whole nother different purpose.
Yeah.
I could see myself on the train, my iPod dies, and I could plug it into this solar thing and I could
crank for 15 minutes and get 4 seconds.
Well, I could crank and I could Yeah, right.
And the cool thing is the flashlights, too, is quite nice, an LED flashlight. And if you had a couple mirrors, you could take the flashlight and beam it back to the solar panel, and it would charge itself, which is very cool.
It's lucky it has a battery, because a solar-powered flashlight without a battery would not be...
Why wouldn't that work?
Listen,
it would work.
This is a small gift that we give to you when you donate to KUSP. So if you can afford $20 a month to KUSP, I highly recommend you doing it. It would help us out quite a bit. We have $9,964 left to go in this pledge drive. Ooh, that number's about to be reduced, I think. Terry's about to write it up again. So just $9,000, that's easy. That's 9 of you donating $1,000. Or it's you donating what you can do. And if everyone does that, we can make this. We can make the station stay on air. It's a very important thing to you in your life. So make a commitment. And if you do $20 a month, we will send you this great radio, wireless radio, flashlight, solar panel charging USB device. Ooh, that's a mouthful.
It's pretty cool.
888-777-1507. That's 888-777-1507. Of course, that's a toll-free number at 1-888-777-1507. Of course, you can go online right now. It's only $9,000 left to go. On air, online right now at kusp.org. It's a secure, safe thing. You only have to trust KUSP. You don't have to trust mint.com. We'll set up an account that works for you. You can do a $10 a month. You can do $20 a month. Credit card deduction thing. Very easy to handle. Couple people have already done this today, right?
Yes, we have Robert from Gilroy. We have Kent from Los Angeles, who is listening. Mm-hmm. And we have an anonymous donor from Little Rock, Arkansas, who is also listening.
Now,
probably
I would assume these are streaming casts.
Must be.
Good radio.
Aside from Gilroy.
Yeah.
He could be streaming.
He could be. Probably streaming through his radio. Well, if you're streaming, I'd love for you to go online right now and go to kusp.org. And if you're listening via radio, please give us a call, 888-777-1507. Okay, back to Flex and Flash. That's a great example of one of the things that's happening with web development now with Adobe Flash plugin, if you will, is that sometimes you don't even know what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say there's an interesting split in terms of what Flash and Flex are used for. I mean, I'd say a lot of it is widget work. Flash apps and Flex apps are a lot more complicated than traditional web apps. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, you're writing the equivalent of a desktop application. If one line is out of place, then your entire application fails to build.
Right.
So the solution and the web is kind of a weird space because every single web page needs to continually evolve.
Right.
So what really has happened is that Flash and Flex have sort of occupied this space of building widgets. So you see video has obviously been a very...
YouTube basically any video you're seeing online now is Flash.
Yeah, basically. And that's really interesting because, you know, eventually we're going to have HTML where there's a video tag and you're going to be able to pop up a video or something.
Very excited about HTML4, actually. Yeah. Video is a tag, yeah.
So Flex really, it requires Flash. I mean, can you just say, I'm going to open up Flex and make everything in here and be done with it? Or do you need to have Flash as...
Yeah, so in other words, Flex is a way to write Flash. They're called SWIFTs. So mm-hmm. everything compiles down to a SWIFT. In the end, it's like a JPEG.
Your
or a
browser
GIF.
Basically understands how to read HTML, how to play JPEGs, how to play some sound files, how to play PNGs and GIFs. And if you have this Adobe Flash plugin, you can play a SWIFT file. That's what you're saying. Is that it's a new file format.
Yeah, and it's not new. I mean, it's 12 years old, it's really old, but virtually everybody has
and
it.
Flash and Flex are two things that write those formats.
Right.
Okay.
And then there's actually another extension than that even. It's called Air, which allows you to take the same code and pull it out onto the desktop and get file system access. So it's really cool. I mean, you can write one application once and run it everywhere. And and everything is really designed for the web, too, which is interesting. Like, you can boot your Air app from a web page. For instance,
right.
if the user allows you to install it.
Right.
So imagine audio players where you can be browsing the web and there's a button, you click it, all of a sudden it's playing your audio player. Right. You know?
And okay, so the charts on Mint, for example, those charts,
right.
You're assuming those are Flex done.
Yeah.
But those have a lot of graphics in them, so how can they be graphiced if there's nobody drawing that stuff?
Well, I mean, basically the Flex framework includes, it's a huge library of code. I mean, it's something like 500K. And
that's a lot of text.
That's a lot of text. Basically, Adobe has spent years having their coders code up chart components and stuff like that. And so basically, as far as the programmer is concerned, the programmer provides the chart component with the data to plot, and then the chart automatically will just do whatever it's going to do. And it's a much richer component than you mm-hmm. could do. You know, you could obviously do a lot of these things with JavaScript, but certain things you just can't do with JavaScript. Right. And that's where... Flash and Flex.
Can you print those Flash charts?
Yeah, there's printing APIs in Flash. I've been shocked at all the things which are available in Flash and Flex. At this point, you know, the other day I was looking at an email library for Flash. Whenever I say Flash, I mean Flash and Flex. But
right.
There's an Excel loading application, so you can load Excel files. There's something which allows you to send email through Google. There's a guy who built a VNC viewer in Flash,
really?
Believe it or not. So so
very
there's
cool.
always security issues that are involved in these applications. But what's so cool about it is taking every single desktop application which you could ever imagine writing, you can put it in the browser.
Right.
And you can cause it to be available to people anywhere and then get that incremental release cycle, which
right.
you get on the web, which is so beautiful for companies that want to try out new technologies and I think it's really going to change the way we do a lot of business. So,
thank you very much. One suggestion I've got for when you have a website that you really like to use and it's in one of your tabs of your browser, there's a great solution for that. And Ben's going to talk about that in just a minute. But first, I'm going to ask you right now to donate to KOSP. This is the last break of this spring pledge drive. And as in, when I stop talking about, when we start stop talking about you calling in, we won't be talking about this anymore, which means this is your last chance right now to do this. Call the station right now, 888-777-1507 to donate to the station. Let me just say that this is kind of an honor to me. I've been involved with the station for 20 years, I think, and I just turned 35 a couple days ago. So you can see that I've been around for, I guess it's been longer. When I was a 7-year-old, I hung out at the station. It's a very different place. Santa Cruz is a very different place. The whole Central Coast is a different place than that long ago. But I want to say that one thing that's been really constant in my life is being able to tune in to really good radio that connects me to my community. So whenever I want, I tune in KOSP. NPR is on a lot of syndicated content. It's also talking to me about events and such in my hometowns, if you will. KOSP is a community for me. And I assume as you listen to this, it's a community for you. And if that's so, go ahead and contribute to your community right now. Allow other people to see what the station's doing. Allow other people to contribute the level you do, your awareness in the world, your awareness in the Central Coast, California. A lot of that's due to your involvement with KOSP because you're a listener. You're involved just like we are. Every week, the geeks here donate their time. We come in about an hour and a half early, waking up early, taking a break from our day, figuring out what we're going to talk about on air, sharing the technology that we love with you. And we're just asking you to donate some money to the station to allow us to keep doing the great content that the station does. KOSP produces really good content 24 hours a day, and we'd like you to help support that. This is the last pledge drive. This is the time to do it. We still have a matching grant left, I believe. Is that right? We still have some money in that matching grant from an anonymous donor in Santa Cruz. Call right now, dollar for dollar match, 1-888-777-1507. Again, that's 1-888-777-1507. Ben, what's a way that you can make your web browser more stable, if you will, for these applications?
Well,
you have 40 seconds.
Yeah, okay. A lot of times you'll have a website open, and all of a sudden it'll crash your web browser, and it'll take down all of your tabs and all of your windows with it. And I'm a tab junkie, so I always have tons of tabs open. So there's this new application. Actually, it's not too new, but it's pretty awesome. It's called Fluid, and it lets you create a site-specific browser. So you can create, and this is for the Mac, I think, only. And this will let you create applications where if you launch the application, it'll just open up a web page. And that seems like a really simple and boring thing, but if you go to the website, I just found it a couple days ago, and I'm just floored.
Basically, a website you use a lot, Gmail would be a good one for me.
Yeah.
You put that in this application wrapper, and now that one application is just Gmail. It's a web application, mm-hmm. but you can start and stop it just like a normal application.
Exactly. So you don't have to have it running with Safari. Right? Like YouTube might crash your browser, things like that. So anyway, it's fluidapp.com. I'm going to try and get the guy on GeekSpeak in
Great.
A couple weeks.
Our guest today was Walt Schlender. Thank you very much, Walt, for coming down from Berkeley to be on the show. I hope to talk with you more about Flash and Flex. It's a great thing.
What has it got in his mind?
I know. And the Geeks today, Al Luckow, Ryder Brooks, Ben Jaffe. I'm Lyle Troxell. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Whole Foods Market, featuring products of over 100 Santa Cruz area producers, free of pesticides, preservatives, antibiotics, and hormones. Whole Foods Market Santa Cruz is now open on Soquel Avenue between Branson 40 and Seabright. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Arto, streaming live and podcasting at kosp.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. For KOSP and for GeekSpeak, my name is Lyle Troxell. See you next week.